brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hey, welcome back to Soft Rep Radio. This is your host, Rad, and I have a wonderful guest with me today. His name is Cole Lyle, and he comes from us, the United States Marine Corps, served as a heavy combat equipment operator. Welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me on, Rad.
Yeah, you know, there's more to it than just the heavy equipment operator. You know, you also helped move some things around on Capitol Hill after you got out of the military, but what was it that got you into wanting to join the military? For my listener out there that's like, well, what ticked you to go to the Marine Corps in the first place?
Yeah, so two separate answers to that. What made me want to join the military, I can't really pinpoint any one thing that made me be like, yeah, I want to join the military. You know, I was an Eagle Scout. I grew up, you know, wanting to serve my community and, you know, was involved in service projects with my church and all sorts of stuff. And I really just, even at a young age, had kind of a fascination with military history. So I think I always just kind of wanted to. And then my mom said, you know, when you turn 18, you're either going to go to school, join the military, or get a job, but you're not staying in my house. And I didn't have money to go to school, and I didn't want to work three jobs to put myself through school like my sisters did and go into debt. And so I was like, yeah, the military makes sense. I want to serve. I remember going to Boy Scout campouts and being excited about it because I was at home with two older sisters and my mom. So it was like my only opportunity to be around a bunch of dudes.
Sure.
And, you know, I wanted the camaraderie and I had that sense of service. So I wanted to go do that. I think the Marine Corps in particular, you know, I talked to recruiters from multiple different, you know, branches and service. But my brother-in-law was not then my brother-in-law, but sister's boyfriend was a Marine, and I really respected him and admired him, and he was in Fallujah, and so talked to me a lot about, and he gave me the real. He talked to me about, you know, the bad stuff about the Corps and the good stuff about the Corps, but I ultimately just made that choice.
To experience it yourself and just said, hey, you know, I'm going to get on this bus or get on this airplane, get on this bus, get on these yellow footprints. Did you go to MCRD? Are you West Coast or are you East Coast Marine?
Yeah, I went to MCRD San Diego.
San Diego.
And, you know, he actually tried to talk me out of it. And he tried to say, you should go to OCS. You should be an officer. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to do that. Because, again, A, going to school. And I think I was pretty self-aware at that point, too, to know that I wouldn't take school very seriously. And I probably needed a little kick in the pants. So.
Yeah, I mean, school's not the easiest for a lot of people, right? Just graduating is just a big accomplishment, let alone, you know, grabbing your Eagle Scout. Good job on that, you know, staying true to that and going to all your campouts and, you know, community selfless service, right? Code of all that, you know, do a good turn daily, right?
Yeah.
And so that's awesome.
I mean, to this day, I can still recite like the Scout Oath and Law just off the top of my head.
As I would imagine, here in Utah, it's pretty popular still scouting. We have like the Order of the Arrow that's very popular. My son's in Scouts. He's a star right now.
Well, you know, the Mormons, they
fund. I do know the Mormons, bro.
It's like over 50% of Boy Scout funding comes from the Mormon Church. And that's why, you know, when all the scandals came out about
the Boy Scouts,
to get too sidetracked.
No, it's true. No, it's okay. It is what it is. It is what it is. And,
you know, the Boy Scouts made the decision to start allowing like gay troop leaders and openly gay, you know, Boy Scouts. The Mormon Church like pulled all their funding. And that's
100%.
Why they had to mortgage a lot of their campsites and everything like that.
You know, there's a fun story at a ceremony for one of our Scouts. You know, they bring your mom up because you got to give your mom a hug. Okay.
Yeah.
Give your mom a hug, right? Because you got your award, you're getting your pinned. But this one young man had two moms, okay? Because it's today, right? We're talking about exactly what you're talking about. And the Scoutmaster, he's old school, but still new school at the same time, because here he is running a troop in this environment that you're talking about from the old school days. And he's like, okay, go ahead and bring your mom up. And both moms get up and walk up front. And he's like, how do I handle this? And I'm watching him. I'm like, how's he going to handle this? He's like, you know, I'm going to let you choose. And he just pointed to the scout. You can choose which mom you're giving this to.
Yeah.
And the other mom's like, well, you know, he's yours. Cool. You give it to him. You know, it's really cool, you know, to see that. Otherwise, that wouldn't have been a thing. You know, that scout is still getting the same, you know, knot tying, the same you know, esprit de corps of unity and, you know, the Scout Oath and the Scout Law and moving forward, and is going to be tomorrow's, you know,
Well, and a lot of folks don't realize that if you get your Eagle Scout and you join the military, you automatically get one rank. Like, you don't join as an E1, you join as an E2 after boot camp.
Automatic.
Because the military respects the amount of, not just the achievement and the award, but like the survival skills you learn and the basic knot tying and like that sort of stuff that's actually something that they don't have to teach you because you already know it.
Right.
And you can teach, you know, your fellow service members.
You could be leaned on. You know, I've met 16-year-olds who I'd be like, I will trust you with my life in the wilderness, you know, through the scouting program. And I know that a recruiter would just love to get hooks into those young men, 100%, you know, and it's not a force thing. And that's what's great about our military is that we are a volunteer, right? And so here you are looking to volunteer. You get in, you go over. Okay, so you enlisted as a Marine, but what made you go into vehicles? You know, what was it that made you want to do that?
Well, I wanted to learn something that I could potentially use after I got out. And so to be clear, I was a diesel mechanic. I wasn't a heavy equipment operator. Those are two separate things.
Thank you.
But as a diesel mechanic, right, you could get out, you're working on 7 tons, what are they called? MAPVs, MRAPs, Everything with a diesel, you could get out and then go work for Caterpillar or go work for Mack Truck or go work for Force Pro or one of those things.
Open your own shop, but be your own boss, you know?
Yeah. And it's just a skill set that I got a little bit of that because I grew up and my dad was very mechanical, but I didn't, you know, I just wanted something that I could potentially use as a job when I got. Ultimately, I didn't go that route, but that was kind of my rationale behind it.
No, that's savage because you're getting instructed through the Marine Corps on how to do that job with efficiency, right? I mean, you know, they say in the Air Force, they're all about attention to detail, but I bet you the Marines said the same thing during training. Your attention to detail is paramount. You know, you need to be attention to detail at all times. You need to make sure this fan belt goes on and this diesel wrench turns this way. And you're like, I got this in my sleep, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, so you go over and you deploy, right? And you're in the middle of
Afghanistan.
Pick a place, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And what hits the fan now? What's going through your mind when I say this? You're like operator, you're a diesel mechanic. And are you seeing it? Is it coming? Are you getting into any type of sorties over there?
You know, most of my time, honestly, was spent on Camp Leatherneck, which was a big base in southern Afghanistan. I got OJT'd on the job trained as a wrecker operator. So I did that. And again, I didn't do like a whole lot of that, but you know, went out and was doing, you know, fuel runs and a wrecker operator, for people who are unfamiliar, are essentially military tow trucks. So anytime something gets blown up, which was very, very often, you'd go out and tow them back to base and pick them up. You know, at one point in time, I think from 09 to maybe even earlier than that, 08, 09 to 11, 12-ish, wrecker operators actually had the highest fatality rate in the Marine Corps because you'd go out and they knew you were going to go out and tow up trucks that they had just blown up. So they'd have secondaries or ambushes or things like that. I honestly never saw heavy combat at some point. You know, I mean, took small arms and indirect, but it wasn't like I was in the thick of
it. But the aftermath of it, you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, for the last month and some change, month and a half, 2 months of my deployment, I volunteered at the trauma center at Bastion, which is the British Air Base, which was right next to, it was literally an adjoining base to Camp Leatherneck. So I spent a lot of time there because they were kind of understaffed, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not a nurse, but I have the same
scout, bro.
Combat, like they call it combat lifesaver training and medic training that we got. So I was like, I'll just be a catch-all. I'm just going to show up and do what I've done. And I mean, you can certainly imagine some of the things that come into a military trauma center. And it's not just Marines and U.S. service personnel. It's local nationals and kids, women. So, yeah, I mean, it was rough. And that is ultimately kind of what led me to having some issues with post-traumatic stress. And it seems stupid to, comparatively, I understand why some people are like, oh, you didn't see combat, but why'd you have these issues with it? Like, to this day, I hate hospitals. Like, I get just real uptight and I can't do them. So
don't wait till you're older to do them, because then you got the long hallway at the VA, bro. And that's like, yeah. You know, and whoever's going to be wheeling you down that mile long hallway, they're going to be older too. So I was just talking to a major general who was running the Department of the Veterans Affairs. We talked about that long hallway and exactly what you're mentioning, right? There's young veterans who don't want to go into the hospital because, you know, we don't want to go. I don't, you know, but when we're older, we realize we have to.
Yeah.
And at that point, the caregiver who's with us has to go there too. And if they're older like us, you know, then it's just
putting... Well, I mean, to be clear, I go. I just don't like going.
I got you.
I mean, when I, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I have worked in veteran advocacy for the better part of a decade. So, I mean, I get the need and the...
For our listener. To
try to, to go to deal with your issues before they become bigger issues. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, that's right. No, you're right. So, just got to do it, right?
Yeah, you just got to do it. Just suck it up and do it.
No one said you got to like it. You just got to do it.
just get it done. And the sooner you get it done, the sooner it's over. So,
getting out of the military, right? We're flash-forwarding through your life here, and you've seen things and been a part of, you know, trauma, and you're now dealing with this in your own way, and. You're at the VA, and what's the first line you threw out there? Were you like, hey, you know, I'm just feeling this way, or who did you reach out? Yeah.
When we got back from Afghanistan, they made us all take what was called a post-deployment health assessment, and it indicated I needed to go, you know, talk to somebody. And so they forced us to, at least the first appointment, if you were like red flagged based on certain answers and whatever, to go see somebody. And so I saw somebody, and, you know, and then I was in a reserve unit, so I wasn't like active duty. So, I couldn't go see a military physician at a military hospital or anything on any frequent basis because I was in the reserve. So, you know, I went to go see a VA psychologist and psychiatrist, and then started utilizing a vet center down in Texas. You know, it was prescribed some SSRIs for sleep and depression.
What's an SSRI? Fill me in.
I forget what the acronym. It's like a serotonin something inhibitor.
Okay.
It's a medical term for, they're basically antidepressants.
Okay. Okay.
So the VA, that's what they prescribe for the symptoms of post-traumatic stress and depression and sleep and all that stuff. But they don't actually, because there's no pill for post-traumatic stress. There's pills for the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. But anyway, so I was taking
pharmaceuticals rearing their heads. Yeah. Yep, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, a year and some change goes by. And, you know, I'm going through a divorce and having some issues as a result of, you know, the pills, and the therapy wasn't really working for me. And
probably dumb thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, as a lot of men and women have, unfortunately, I got and spiraled down, and it was, you know, one night in April in 2014 that I was like that close to becoming a suicide statistic. If it wasn't for another Marine intervening, you know, I would be. But as is often the case, like that night, I was probably drinking too much and in my feels, and I really, you know, I can't explain it too well, but the next morning, I should have been hungover, but I wasn't. I was just very clear and very, like, focused. Yeah. And my mindset went from, like, you know, I was thinking, like, why are you doing this to yourself? You know, you're, at the time, my divorce, I was like, you didn't do anything wrong. You weren't the, you weren't the party to the situation that, so, you know, that, and then.
So you had a lot of factors hitting you, dude. You had a lot. You had a lot. You know, you had some something going on with the relationship and family.
Yeah.
Your whole bubble was just kind of.
And like, you know, finances. The reason
we've all been in a dark hole. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody that says they haven't, I'm like, okay. you know, everybody's had a crazy thought in their head. It's just you can't. And, you know, the follow through is the action and all that.
Yeah. So I stopped thinking I have nothing and started thinking I have the opportunity to do anything because I didn't have anything holding me back or tethering me. And so I decided I wanted to go back into public service. And at the time, I wanted to, like, in my mind, I was like, yeah, I want to go into the Foreign Service. I want to, you know, serve in a diplomatic capacity. I only knew one or two people that worked in politics and policy. And so I contacted those folks and they got me plugged in and was on my path to doing that. But I realized I still needed to find ways to mitigate symptoms of post-traumatic stress. And I didn't want to keep taking pills. And then, like I said, therapy wasn't working. So I stopped doing that and ended up going and talking to a buddy of mine who had a service dog. And it worked phenomenally well for him. But the VA didn't provide any funding for it. And the nonprofits that I kind of researched had year-long wait times.
Sure.
And so I ended up paying about 10, maybe a little more than 10,000 to get my own dog. Her name's Kaya, German Shepherd. So, you know, went up and interned in Washington, D.C. and with Kaya, and somebody who happened to be a senator stopped me on the street, Senator Tillis of North Carolina, and started asking me about her because I'm not blind and don't have a limb missing.
How can you have a service dog? Yeah.
You have a service dog.
Yeah.
Got that question a lot.
I think it too. You know, yeah. It, 100% through the airport. Yeah. I'm like, what's up with you? Why you got an iguana? Service iguana.
Well, no, I'm just kidding. The iguanas are totally.
No. But your canine. No, your beautiful dog. So the senator's interested in saying, hey, why are you using a therapy pet?
Yeah. And so I told him and said the VA didn't provide funding or resources for it. So he was like, well, come on by to my office and let's talk about this. Let's kick this around. And so I did. And he didn't initially do anything and write the bill, but he gave me the idea that if he was willing to listen, other people might be willing to listen too. So I drafted what became known as the initial version of the PAWS Act, which is an acronym for Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members. So I went around, shopped that to a bunch of different offices to see if anybody would be willing to sponsor it and kind of spearhead it. And then Congressman DeSantis was the original, like the person before he was this big national figure.
Yeah, before he was in the governor's office, yeah.
Was like, yeah, I'll do it. Like as an Iraq vet and then also having a service dog org in his district, he was like, this is a great idea. Let's do it.
Sure.
So spent some years doing that. At the time, went back to Texas A&M to finish my degree. So I was flying back in political science, and I was flying back and forth from College Station to D.C. to lobby for this doing political science. You know, it didn't pass in that Congress, but it took a few more Congresses. But that's kind of ultimately what got me into veteran advocacy generally. So
kind of becoming your own advocate, figuring it out for yourself. And then you're like, you know, others could use your lead.
Yeah. And I got a lot of fulfillment. I think one of the keys to overcoming issues of when you feel, you know, misunderstood or lonely is serving others. And I mean, if you're having a bad day or having a bad year, you know, like go volunteer at a soup kitchen, go volunteer at an American Legion or go volunteer at, I mean, really anywhere.
Just volunteer.
Just find a place where you can be useful and feel like you're serving and feel like you got a little purpose and people rely on you and depend on you. But that was another reason why the service dogs, you know, they work so well is because, yes, they're trained to mitigate specific symptoms for you. Like that's the difference between a service dog and like a emotional support animal, a therapy animal. Like a service dog is legally protected because it has specific tasks that it does for you to mitigate symptoms. But the reason why they're so powerful is because they provide you with that sense of purpose and meaning and belonging that you get up. They need to be taken care of. They need to be fed. You've got to get out of bed. You got to go for walks. You got to do all this stuff.
You need to get up. You got to be fed. You got to go for walks. And they're there with you doing it, you know? So it's a
If you find yourself spiraling down again and getting to that point where, you know, you're alone, and when men and women get to that point, they feel alone and they feel like nobody loves them. And the dog is a very powerful backstop when you're sitting there with a gun in your mouth and you are like, I can't leave this dog because this dog's
like, are we eating that?
Loves me. Yeah.
Like, don't do that.
This dog loves me and would miss me.
Yes.
So that's a huge reason why I think they're so powerful in the fight against suicide.
I think so also. And I mean, I'm not against, you know, doing push-ups to prevent suicide or bring awareness to it. But, you know, it's got to come down to the individual to, 100%. You know, be on their own best recognizance and do their own thing. I can't stop you from tattooing yourself, but I can stop you from tattooing me with whatever it is. But it's up to you to do whatever you want to yourself. I'm a big believer in self-choice, right? Like, it's up to you. It's your call, man. But I'll tell you, if anybody out there is listening to this and they're tripping out and they're like, well, okay, hit me up on Instagram and I'll talk with you. You know, if you're out there like that, you know, if you need a lighthouse out there, you can also mission roll call. You know, let's talk about mission roll call. That's a whole nother avenue where people can look to for some type of like a security blanket, don't you think? Your website, you can scroll there.
Yeah, I mean, so mission roll call is a national advocacy program. So our mission is to advocate on behalf of all veterans in the United States to improve policies that will reduce the suicide epidemic. And the way we do this, we're not like a direct service organization. We're not out building houses for, you know, so amputees or things like that, like the Gary Sinise Foundation or others. Our goal is for policy to change for the better using the direct voice of veterans. So as we all know, you know, suicides, there's no one thing we can point to that says this is why vets are killing themselves. So we get involved in a lot of policy discussions, but we've got about 1.5 million veterans that are opted in to our text and email polls. And when Congress or the VA or the White House comes out with some policy that says, you know, we want to do this and or this or blah, 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 whatever it is, we poll those veterans directly and we get pretty high response rates, to be honest. Depends on what it is, but and we're able to give that instantaneous feedback to those policymakers so they can be like, oh, maybe this isn't a good idea. Or, this has a lot of support in the veteran community, and we didn't think it did, you know? So
maybe you should take a poll of the debt ceiling being held hostage with veterans attached to it so that, you know, I mean, maybe that's a poll that should be taken and sent up the flag because, you know, they want to cut out right now. Let's see. So we're in May, and it is Mental Health Awareness Month. Okay, so there is a lot of like, you know, this chatter that politicians want to like, you know, have a photo op. They want to have somebody in the background, you know, for this mental health awareness. Well, what are they doing right now is they're trying to, from my understanding is, you know, say we're going to cut out all these veterans offsite visits where they go and visit with people like maybe on a Navajo Nation, you know, and they have to go out there and visit with veterans that are not able to get to the VA. And they want to cut all these VA benefits out. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm actually really glad you brought that up because there's a reason that we haven't done a poll on that. This is just classic. This is the thing that most veterans hate about Washington. Veterans benefits are not and were not ever actually going to get cut. They were using that as a talking point to try to win the messaging battle. But
it seems like a bad message from who I talk to on this show and with like guys like yourself and veterans who are actually dependent on the payments and these visits to cut 80,000 jobs when the last president got 3 passes with Nancy Pelosi in charge of the Congress. Yeah. She was in charge and she said, here's the debt ceiling. Boom. Raised it. Here's the debt ceiling. Boom. Nothing was held onto it. No veterans were held onto it. No one was held to it. No, you know, my mom, if she was still around, she'd be taking care of my dad. She would have depended on these benefits that are being, you know.
Well, and I'm not even taking like political sides here. I'm not saying, but
no, right, and neither am I. Because I'm saying both parties in the last administration allowed it to happen.
But to be clear, the facts are that yes, they need to come to an agreement on the debt ceiling.
Just raise it.
Which is just you know, raise it or don't raise it. You're right.
Just raise it for the Americans. Just raise it and then just figure it out everything else.
Right. And certain people are trying to use, you know, that as leverage to talk about spending. Because the reality is, like, we're at this point, like, $31 trillion something dollars in debt, which comes out to, like, $97,000 per taxpayer. Right. Government spending is out of control. Right?
Well, 25% of that was under the Trump administration with 3 debt ceilings raised to make it $31 trillion.
It's a bipartisan problem. Spending is a bipartisan problem.
But it wasn't in the last administration, right? They approved it.
Well, I mean,
there were no hostages.
There were some people, like some conservatives in the.
But at the end of it, it just got passed with no question. Yeah, I mean, the debt ceiling, like, right?
Nancy Pelosi, like, was the Speaker of the House,
and she approved it.
Yeah. So
for Trump.
Yeah.
Right. But that's not happening now for Biden.
Well, I mean. Again, this is why I'm not trying to get into a political conversation because, like, we are nonpartisan, and I'm not taking
But Kevin, it's veterans that they that the debt ceiling's kind
well,
of.
Well, again, let me go back because sure. this is not. It never was going to be cut because, first of all, the budget that the GOP passed is like a guideline. It's not an actual legally binding thing. So even if the Senate passed it, it's not. It doesn't go to the president for signature because it's just an agree. It's literally just an agreement between the House and the Senate, so that the appropriations committees, which are the ones that actually budget line items for programs and things like that, are like, oh, this is the budget that we should stick to, not break what are called PAYGO rules. So budget PAYGO rules. It's all like minutia, you know, stuff. In 50% of the last budgets that have been passed, there were no specifics about which committees should have this much money versus this much money. So there was no, in this budget, there was no specifics from the House GOP saying that, you know, veterans benefits are going to get cut. The White House and Democrats coming out and saying the GOP wants to cut veterans benefits by, you know, 22% or whatever, was a, they got that number out of thin air because they said if the GOP budget were to pass, that's FY22 budget levels, which is X dollars less than what FY24 budget is. That's the proposed, because up until the budget was passed, we haven't passed an FY24 appropriations bill yet. We're still on FY23.
Maybe if the Congress cut their paychecks, like they want to cut the veterans' paychecks, then maybe I'd be okay with that. Maybe if they want to take no pay for the job and show us the love of the game, rather than this hostage scenario, because I have to just, I have to digress, man. I'm seeing a different picture from a lot of people that I'm talking to who have been like department heads of the United States of America. And they're just like, yeah, why can't we just be like, you know, done with it? You know what I mean? And a poll like to your veterans might help push that towards, you know, let them know about it. I mean, it's just a thing.
Again, so here's the other reason why never going to happen. Because the Speaker and the Appropriations Chair, which is the person with the power over the money for the veteran programs, and then the House Veterans Affairs Committee Chairman, all said no cuts to veterans benefits, even though there's no specific, like, you know, so everybody was like, hey, pass an amendment to the budget saying that no veterans benefits are going to be cut. So they came out with their appropriations bill, their proposed appropriations bill, that literally increases the budget number for veterans. So it completely negates that argument.
Well, if they cut it, would it hit the PAWS Act at all? Would that be affected if they cut these programs?
Well, they're not going to, though. That's what I'm saying.
Let's just say that PAWS and veteran outreach and 80,000 jobs and funding is cut for the debt ceiling.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah, please.
All right. So over the last 10 years, do you feel like we've made significant improvements? And this is not a trick question.
No,
do you
feel
like we've made significant improvements in veteran suicide, in access to care, in quality of care at the VA? Do you feel like it's gotten significantly better?
So myself, I feel with suicide and the VA and awareness. Okay, so my take is I think you can do only so many push-ups to try to push an agenda. Okay. Mm-hmm. Without having to worry about the individual's mental health, right? There's not much I can do when somebody just goes the full distance, and the VA is going to have a hard time stopping somebody from going the full distance. I usually find that alcohol is a heavy, you know, factor in people that are making these sloppy decisions at that time. They're their own decisions, though, because whether you're on some ayahuasca or you're on some type of cannabis or you're on some type of pharmaceutical or you're taking alcohol, all of your thoughts are in your own head.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever you're spinning. All right. And so if you are on something and you don't have the clarity to call the VA because you feel that you don't want to go to the VA because they're not going to take care of you, then you're not going to call the special hotline number and vent, you know? And that's why I was trying to say, like, earlier, if you have younger dudes and okay, everybody's a dude to me. So, you know, if you've served in the military and you can get into the VA, you should go into the VA and get checked, because they do have services, right? They do have things that are there, but we're prideful. I'm very prideful. Yeah. You know, I could go have my injury re-looked at and all this, but I'm just like, I don't want to go down the hallways anymore. It reminds me of my dad. It reminds me of my grandpa. It reminds me of my mom breaking her feet, pushing my dad, you know, in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
All the time, getting denied an appointment after getting scheduled for an appointment.
So, short answer though,
do you think that it's better?
over the last decade, two decades, do you feel like the VA has made significant improvements in those areas? Suicide, access to care, and
I think on paper they feel like they have, but I don't think in actuality it has really made a real difference. I think that people have made bills and passed things and spent taxpayers' dollars on pamphlets.
Yeah. So my point there is, right, over the last 10 years, the VA's budget has increased by 104%. Over the last, since 2001, it's increased over 600%. Since 2001, they have hired twice as many, like they've gone from about 212,000 employees in 2001 to about 434,000. And the veteran population has been declining because 65% of veterans are over the age of 55, Vietnam veterans that are, you know, unfortunately dying. Yeah. And so the veteran population is declining. VA usage is declining, but their budget and their full-time employee count keeps going up. And we haven't seen a significant, in my view, improvement in those areas. We seem to always go back to the same conversations about why does the VA not do more on suicide? You know, what's, why do they?
Well, what do you think the VA can do more on suicide?
Well, I think that first and foremost, they need to make suicide prevention their number one overall priority. They need to redirect the Office of Suicide Prevention as a direct report to the secretary instead of being housed under the Veterans Health Administration, because it's not always a health problem. It's a financial problem. It's a relationship problem. It's a, you know, I think we completely view suicide through the wrong lens. It's not always mental health. Certainly mental health can exacerbate that. But I think suicide is a conglomeration of parts of the human condition, you know, that to your point, like people make choices and sometimes they're bad financial choices. That doesn't mean they need to go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Sometimes they just need a little, you know, financial help, man.
Right. So financial advisors who you would go and see, you know, for that issue. You'd go and talk to someone to say, hey, try some financial advice.
So, and this is the other thing, the VA budget is the second largest budget in the United States government behind the Department of Defense. Their budget request this year was something like $340 billion, okay? Massive, massive funding. The Office of Suicide Prevention and the suicide prevention budget at VA is 0.1% of that budget. 0.1%.
Bro, I was in special ed. You're making me do math here. I'm doing like 0.1%.
It's of the 340 something billion dollars, it's 497 million.
That's okay.
It's a small percentage. And half of that goes to what you're talking about. Advertisements. Whenever you see a Choose VA ad online or superimposed on a hockey rink or something like that, that's ad dollars that the VA is spending from the suicide prevention budget. So that's number one. But part of that budget, what they're doing...
Well, and also broadcasters, just real quick, broadcasters in Utah, I just want to let you know, have to allow the military ad space per FCC regulations. So if you're listening to the radio late at night here, and all of a sudden it's like, have you thought about joining the United States Marine Corps? The Marine Corps is here for you, brought to you by Utah Broadcasters Association. Because there is a rule where... You know, the federal FCC allows these guys on the airwaves, just like going to a high school, they get funding government, they get to have recruiters there. So I do know that some funding comes from like broadcast side as well as spent dollars on advertising. And it's not so much like advertising is going to stop suicide.
Yeah.
The individual listening to us right now is going to stop it
and
themselves.
This is my other beef with this. They always come out with like, oh, we've got this new app. Right. We've got this suicide prevention app where people check in on a daily basis. So I was like, have you guys ever been so depressed and lonely that you're not going to fucking check an app, excuse me, every day and be like, oh, my gosh, I'm feeling depressed today. I got to press this button and go talk to.
Unless it's got points to Starbucks involved or something. I don't know.
I don't get sometimes the logic behind. They're like, oh, this is a really great idea. It's like the good idea.
Live 365 days, get a $10,000 bonus on your VA check.
Yeah.
I mean, just check in, though. You got to check in. Thumbprint. Yeah. You got to have biometrics. But I don't know if you're going to people want that.
So that's my biggest thing. But in 2020, Congress passed the Commander John Scott Hannon Suicide Prevention Act, which had the Staff Sergeant Parker Gordon Fox grants that literally was the VA providing up to $750,000 per organization, community organization, not a VA entity, that had demonstrated they were in the community doing suicide prevention work. So they were leveraging community organizations, which I think is the right approach, because less than 50% of veterans in the United States even use the VA. There's like 16.5 million veterans in the United States per the census. Less than half of them use the VA. So the VA is not even going to touch half the veteran population.
Well, and like what about sometimes, you know, like the reservists out there, do they get access to go to the VA?
It depends.
Right.
It depends.
You know, so
did they deploy?
So right? would you, let me ask
you this.
Are
they a veteran?
Did you go in? Yeah, really? I mean, yes, you are if you swear in. Here's the thing to me is if you...
No, I said that in air caps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The
no,
legal
I was like...
definition oh, and of a veteran, right?
Is, I was Malibuing it with you like, bro.
yeah. I mean, the legal definition of a veteran, you know, being like you have to serve 180 days, that's not training, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, do you think a reservist that does 6 years and has to like balance...
That's what I'm saying.
...reserve time and whatever and,
that's
and
what
go
I'm getting
do
at.
ATs and go do all this, you think they don't deal with some of the same issues?
That's
you
what
know,
we should be frustrated about is why not all vets... get the access to the vet to that $380 billion number you're throwing around. That why not? You know, I mean, so you serve two weekends a month, but then also you deploy as a reservist to full time combat.
Yeah,
bruh. Even at that point, okay. Let alone just being in the military and you know doing what you're doing, you're deploying. You know, it's just a shock to me to hear that. You know, I just learned that the other day as well. In fact, I was talking to the president of AWP on our show, and I saw that
Jim
your
Lorraine.
Website. Yes, Jim Lorraine. And he was talking about that same thing, and great guy to have on. And also, I noticed as I was scrolling through your mission roll call that you guys are teamed up with him.
Yeah. That's why earlier I said we're a national nonprofit program.
Yeah.
We're not our own separate organization. So we're a program of America's Warrior Partnership because the way I look at it is like America's Warrior Partnership is like the big think tank that does the research with Operation Deep Dive and trying to figure out where the VA gets the data wrong on suicide prevention because they do. And we are kind of the smaller, more nimble organization designed to go out into the veteran community, talk to vets, get ground truth, do these polls and do the advocacy work with the policymakers. So it's a different enough to where we are our own separate kind of program housed within AWP.
Oh, that's very cool.
So Jim technically is my boss. Yeah.
Oh, not only is he a member or the president, he's your boss.
Yeah. Not technically my boss. He is my boss.
He is your boss. Yeah. I think he'll get a kick out of what I just said when he goes to listen to this. All right. Because we were talking about how, you know, this all hits home and, you know, being a caregiver, helping veterans. And I'm like, not only are you a member of this dude, you're also the president. You know, it's like, he's like, it's true. Right. Who better to help try to lead the way than someone who's been through what you need help getting through, right? That's why you say, go serve somewhere, go help somebody, do something. You know, have you done a good deed? You know,
good turn.
Yeah, a good turn daily, right? That's, it is so true. And it can help you and it makes you feel better. And you don't have to put it on TikTok. You don't have to put it on Instagram. You can just open the door for somebody and just say, have a nice day. You can just do something nice. Just be that person, you know, because it's contagious.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it just is. And so is patriotism. I'm not going to lie. And if you're out there and you want to try to join the military, go try it. Give it your all. Give it your best. Raise your hand. Step up. That's another selfless option. I'm not paid by any department to say these things. Right. This is just a real, real talk. And I'm just saying, you know, you can try your best foot forward at going to your local recruiter, asking them questions and taking a test and see what the next test does and what the next test and you make your own decisions.
Yeah.
So I would say give it a shot because, you know, we do have people out there that have the heart to want to serve. And, you know, if you don't want to be drafted and you don't want to have a conscription like World War II or, you know, through the dawn of time, conscriptions, right? An army of forced patriotism doesn't get anywhere.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, you know, if we continue to degrade the incentives to serve, then, and frankly, young people are looking at how veterans are treated, and they see sometimes they're not treated well, especially because Mission Roll Call, we did a national research poll that was representative of the American population, and we found that 67% of Generation Z did not know a veteran or somebody currently serving on active duty. So they have no real touch points into.
Wow, that's just a flip of the switch, because it was just everybody has somebody that has served in this long conflict of Afghanistan and Iraq that we dealt with.
Well, I mean, military service is a family business at this point, because 80% of people that have served have an immediate family member that served, which is why you see Gen Z saying, you know, we don't know anybody, because it's all the same families that are just continuing to serve. But if we continue to create incentives like the GI Bill, we don't take care of the veteran suicide crisis, we're going to continue to see. It's like 2 years in a row now that the Army is not going to meet its recruiting goals. The Marine Corps is not going to. And part of that's because...
Well, I think that's where money should be spent on pamphlets, for real. Like, let's talk about the GI Bill real quick. You don't know, like, when you enlist, they don't tell you, your recruiter doesn't tell you, they're going to take money out of your paycheck every month. Well,
they don't do that anymore. That was the Montgomery GI Bill. So the Forever GI Bill passed in 17 or 18.
Okay. I forget. Okay.
So they don't actually take money out of your GI Bill anymore. And now, if you serve, when you enlist, or if you're an officer, before you get out, you can elect to give your GI Bill to your son or daughter. So you don't even have to use your GI Bill. You could transfer it to your son or daughter if you don't want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, people that I know that are going into service. One of my former interns last year, he's commissioning later this year. And I told him, I was like, man, if you want to go to grad school, do it while you're on active duty, like an online grad school program.
Right.
You use tuition assistance and then give your GI Bill to your son or daughter. He doesn't have kids yet, but you can transfer it to a dependent so that you not only get your grad degree paid for, no student loans or anything like that. But now your son or daughter has the GI Bill.
That's really good to know.
Yeah.
All right. So my listener out there, you listening, okay, if you're thinking about going to talk to that recruiter, bring up the GI Bill, talk to them about it, get more information, get clarity, ask them. They're the ones that are the subject matter experts on a career, right? Cause they move it away from recruiting. But I'm just putting that out there because, hey, you know, go check out if you're listening to this and you're like, scouts is still a thing. It is. There's a local scout probably in your area. Go check out, you know, the Boy Scouts, and they're still doing tree planting and Eagle Scout projects. And we're up here in Salt Lake. And I mean, literally, they're getting ready to go do a camp crossover, and the Order of the Arrow's kicking off. And it's a big, the jamboree's going on. So, you know,
you're bringing back memories, man. I can't wait to, you know, to, if I have the pleasure of getting involved again, to go on those campouts and help shape, you know, young men. Cause part of it too, for me, was like my dad and my mom got divorced when I was young.
Yeah.
And so my dad wasn't like around. I spent summers on the ranch with my dad and things like that, but the scoutmasters were really good mentors.
Very much.
And so it was good for me. And I kind of, you know, I want to give back in some way, either through the scouts or Big Brothers, Big Sisters or something like that, so that I can kind of pay it forward and be that mentor for somebody else.
That's very, very awesome and very positive. And I like your energy, and I like everything that you're after. And I wish that the VA would, you know, I talked to some dudes, and I was like, these guys that are at the head of the VA from past administrations, and it's like recreational therapy. How come it has to be a certain rating? How come you can't just be prescribed, you know, outdoors, you know, activities, or going and skiing, or trying to go swimming, you know, something like that, right? Especially if the VA has a pool there for pool therapy. That's recreational. You're in the water or going to your local pool, but just somehow, you know, taking some of that $380 billion budget that might have a slush fund or something, or instead of putting it in pamphlets, put it into memberships to the pool for someone who can't get to the VA, right? Yeah. Like they want to go swim at their local pool. You can cover that. I mean, if you can cover pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
You know, that's the same thing with your PAWS Act.
Well, and that's why, you know, I said I think we view suicide through the wrong lens, because, you know, the VA's budget is broken down into three separate agencies. There's obviously the VA is the entire entity, but then there's the Veterans Health Administration, which is one, you know, one silo, and that's the brick and mortar healthcare system that you see, the doctors and things like that. There's the Veterans Benefits Administration, which is the administration that pays out GI Bill, pays out disability compensation, all that stuff. There's the Veterans Cemetery Administration, which administers national cemeteries and all that stuff. So when a veteran passes away, if they're eligible, they can get buried at a national cemetery. But the disability compensation, half of the VA's budget is what's called mandatory spending. So it is like Social Security, it's veteran disability compensation. So Congress doesn't appropriate that money. They don't choose to spend it. It's automatic. If a veteran has disability compensation, the government has to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is potentially going to get delayed if the debt ceiling does not get passed. Mm-hmm. Because like Social Security check, we don't actually know. This is pretty unprecedented. If it actually happens and the dollar, you know, defaults,
stops, yeah,
we don't know, but it's there's a strong potential that disability compensation gets delayed weeks, months, however long it goes.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. Fixed incomes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You use it to pay for, you know, mortgage. And
that's what I'm saying, homie. We just got to just snap out of this.
Just got to suck it up.
And just get it done, because there's people close to us who are relying on SSI and veterans benefits, like lifetime TRICARE members.
Okay. Yeah.
Dependents of 100% rated family members who all they could do was die leaving their kin. This TRICARE for life.
Yeah.
Okay. I know it all too well. Okay. It's just a close to that. You get it. We could talk VA all day, on the record, off the record. You know, again, my grandpa died there. My dad basically had multiple heart surgeries there. My mom's veteran of a Green Beret. My dad was a Green Beret. My mom was pushing him the whole way. You know, and all I remember, her feet. Aaron, she'd say, my feet, Aaron, you know, pushing dad in the wheelchair when he's pushing 300 pounds. You know, it's like, you know, these women and these caregivers and these significant others that are out there, they're also the veteran. And I just want to show them love right now and let them know that if they're listening, I want to hear from you too. You know, if you are a caregiver or a wife of a loved one, then you're doing that. Get on my show. Come on. I don't mind. I'll have you on. Just like Cole. We're just really talking, right? We're trying to have a conversation. Yeah. With each other.
Yeah.
So it can happen and we can do this. And again, my past guests have really hit me with, we all have US on our name tape, US Army, US Marines, US Air Force. At the end of the day, it's all US at the end of the day. That's what we should be, you know, all for one, one for all. And so, you know, I want to thank you being on my show today. And I know it took us a couple times to get together, and I know you're a new father, and congratulations on that. And, you know, Mission Roll Call is a part of the American Warrior Partnership, and you should check it out. And it'll be typed out in the dissertation on our website at softrep.com. So you'll just be able to click on everything that you need to do. And I want to thank my producers that go in and do that for me. They listen to this and then they just write it out. I'm like, dudes, thank you. And then they write it and I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good conversation. So thanks a lot for all your hard work, Anton and Chris and Mark. So behind the scenes. And I want to again thank Nathan, who referred you to come on the show. All right. So thanks to Nate. Yeah, dude. And thanks for allowing it to happen. I really appreciate it, Cole. Thank you.
100%. It was a great conversation. I'm happy to come back anytime if there's another debt ceiling crisis or something like that going on.
I don't know.
That we need to just, you know, kick around and talk about.
Right. Well, it's on our minds. It's all of us. You're welcome back. That's 100%. Okay. And I hope to shake hands with you in person one day. That's the end of the story. So
I love Utah. So, you know,
we're still snowboarding.
Yeah.
It's the middle of May.
Yeah.
Well, anytime you're out here, and the jamboree's going on. So again, if you're listening, I want to say thanks to you for being a part of Soft Rep. Go check out our merch store at softrep.com and also softrep.com/bookclub. All right. We have a book club, and, you know, go check it out and support that. So reading is cool, and being nice to one another goes a long way. So on behalf of Cole and myself here at Soft Rep, thank you and saying peace.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.